Full Service Radio and The Leap are supported by Glenn's Garden Market, a local grocery store, deli, and craft beer bar at DuPont Circle at 20th and S Streets. Good food from close by.
Tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hi, and welcome to The Leap, coming to you live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Gordon. I own a small business, Gordy's Pickle Jar, and one of my favorite things about owning a small business is talking with and learning from other entrepreneurs. And every Wednesday, I get to have these conversations on air by bringing together small business owners from a wide range of disciplines to share stories, tips, and advice. You can listen to the show live every Wednesday at noon or anytime on fullserviceradio.org. On today's show, I'm super excited to chat with Ann Yang, co-founder of Misfit Juicery, a social venture that transforms ugly fruits and vegetables into delicious cold-press juices to combat food waste. Hey, Ann.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining. Before we talk about kind of all things Misfit, I wanted to chat with you a little bit about the road that led you there. Did you always have like a really great passion for food waste?
Yeah, it is a passion that my co-founder Phil and I discovered in college, and it's a business that we started in college in a dorm room. So we had four crates of ugly peaches from one farmer named Tim and a Vitamix that I borrowed from a woman I babysat for, and we were essentially hustling our friends with six packs of beer to help us out, so definitely a really humble experiment. But the way that we got there is that we were both in the International Relations School at Georgetown, and we're just sort of simultaneously realizing that the food system was the social apparatus in which most of the issues that we cared about were being addressed. So learning about how the Arab Spring was caused by increasing wheat prices, or about how 80% of our fresh water is used in agriculture, and it's like a core part of international conflict. And through that avenue, we like found out about food waste, but more importantly, it was just this idea that while like the food system is touching on all these other issues that we care about.
So yeah. Then you guys were just like, were you and Phil friends before you kind of got into this class, or you knew Phil for a while?
Yeah, we met our freshman, his sophomore year, and also my sophomore year of college, and it was just so funny because we like to tell people that we're different species in our personality types, but siblings in our values system. So nice. You know Phil, there, like we're very different people, but we have very similar value systems, and just became really good friends in college. Yeah,
so awesome. So it takes a ton of willpower to start a business at any age, but starting your first enterprise while still in school is especially challenging. Can you tell us a little bit how you balanced kind of starting Misfit at Georgetown and still finishing school? What year were you in when you started Misfit?
We incorporated when I was a junior in college.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how was it kind of like, you know, pursuing the startup and attending to your like schoolwork?
It was crazy. It was really challenging, honestly. I think it was a lot of late nights and early mornings, but I think that what was like really powerful about it was that Phil and I were very aware that we were first-time entrepreneurs, that we're students, so that means like we don't have experience in anything else, and we really relied on our community, everyone from our friends who would help us out like in between classes to professors who were helping us figure out like really like what terms meant for the first time, like cost of units sold, like all of these things that were completely unfamiliar to us. And I think the way that we balanced it was just really like having an amazing circle of like friends and mentors around us that really helped us fill the gaps of what we didn't know faster. But it was like, I wouldn't say that we ever really achieved balance. Like it was a really hectic first few years.
Right.
But like definitely completely dependent on the people around us.
So, I mean, based on what you said, I mean, was it kind of advantageous to kind of start in college? Because you had all these resources and people kind of like helping you figure things out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like being a student was really helpful in the sense that we were really already in the mindset that we were learning and that was an experiment, and just sort of like we were like, okay, like let's just do the next obvious thing. And I also think it was like there was like a safety net kind of attached to it, because it was like, okay, we're in school, like why not do this? And I think that like it really does get you into the mindset where it's like you feel more safe to fail and like make mistakes, because as you, like, a lot of our investors are people who are saying, like, this is the best time to do this because they kind of wish that they had done it earlier in their careers, and now they have mortgages and kids, and it's more of a risk factor. And so I think that, like, when we're really grappling, like, about the potential of failure or, like, this not working out, like, hearing that and being like, actually, this is, like, one of the safest times that you can do this was, like, really reassuring.
Awesome. Yeah. So did you guys, how did you guys, like, fund it? Did you guys... You know, you guys did such a good job. I don't know if you... Did you fund it with, like, your own kind of savings? Or did you guys get grants? Or how was it, you know, when you first started, how was it funded?
Yeah, so we started the business with $6,000 that we won from two pitch competitions at Georgetown. One was, like, a social enterprise pitch competition that was actually sponsored by Sweetgreen. And the other one was a pitch competition that was, like, sponsored by the business school. So we had $6,000, and that's how we first started the business. And then while we were in school, we bootstrapped the business on revenue and on other pitch competition money. So we were applying for everything that we could think of at every university. And then we actually raised one round of financing, like, when we graduated from college.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like you guys have done such an exceptional job in applying for and winning for, like, non-equity grants. And, you know, how much have you guys all raised, like, kind of that way?
Oh my gosh, through non-equity grants, let me think about that. Let's see, probably around $125,000.
It's amazing, right? I mean, because I feel like not a lot of people, I feel like you've been so smart to, like, go after those avenues, and it's such a great way to, like, tell your stories, get it out there to investors, but also, like, to get, you know, non-equity funds.
Totally. Yeah. And we're, like, super, a lot of the money was also very strategic. Like, I think a lot of those pitch competitions were, like, set up with, like, mentorship sort of attached to it, and it was super helpful. Yeah.
That's really, really great. So you guys were doing raising funds that way. You did a round of funding. And then did you do that all before you got accepted to the Chobani incubator?
Yeah, so we actually, like, fully closed our first round of financing, like, 3 weeks after we got into the Chobani Food Incubator. So it was kind of happening simultaneously.
So amazing.
Thank you. Yeah.
I feel like, you know, the Chobani Incubator, if you could tell, you know, our listeners a little bit about that, but how it, I feel like it was a kind of a pivot point for you guys. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think... So the Chobani Food Incubator was started by Chobani, and it is basically, as, like, a big good food business, Chobani wants to support small startups that have, like, aligned values and help them scale. So for what that means for them, it's, like, they're trying to support companies that have good food and are trying to get it to everyone. And we were one of six companies in the inaugural class of the Chobani Food Incubator. And I think what was so helpful about it was that it really was clear to us that Chobani was using their product as a platform. And so, for example, about a third of Chobani employees are actually refugees. And that's, like, something that Hamdi really cares about, their CEO. So it was really amazing to see them grow this amazing business, but with good food values. And then the other thing that was super helpful about it was that we were one of the earlier stage companies in the cohort that we were in. So having companies that were a year to 3 years ahead of us in stage was super helpful in terms of having, like, peer mentorship, but then also this larger vision of what this looks like at scale from Chobani.
So great. Thanks. Yeah, I love that program so much. And you've stayed in close touch with kind of everybody in the cohort, right? And you're still, like, learning from
them. Yeah, they're our family now. So it's a really super founder friendly, amazing program that is very authentic in their interest in helping small companies grow.
So great. So now that you guys are moving on to kind of doing, are you in fundraising stage right now to do another round?
Yeah, we're actively fundraising right now. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, so you guys are moving from being kind of bootstrapped to closing another funding round. What's your guys', like, focus? Are you focused on kind of doing the infrastructure to scale?
Yeah. So we spent a lot of 2017 putting the infrastructure in scale. So we really worked on the scalability of our manufacturing and sourcing. We went through this rebrand process, which is amazing. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
it's you. So good.
We got out of direct distribution. So we set up all of our distributor relationships. So we're no longer, like, directly bringing juice to accounts. And the Chobani Food Incubator was, like, super pivotal to helping us set up the infrastructure to scale. I think for us, like, what we're raising on is this much larger platform idea, which is, like, the overarching thesis of Misfit is that we're creating delicious products out of supply chain inefficiencies, and that juice is our pilot product. So we're really, right now what we're doing is we're fundraising on this larger concept and this larger idea.
Right. I love that you call it, you know, it's got to be so helpful to, like, say it's a platform, right? I mean, because that's like opens the doors to so many things.
Totally.
So I wanted to talk to you a bit about, you know, the sourcing challenges that you have, or how you set up your sourcing. So can you tell us a little bit about like your supply chain and how you procure like the scraps and seconds and what that all looks like?
Yeah. So food waste is a much larger issue than most people think. About 20 billion pounds of fruits and vegetables go unharvested or unsold every year. And a lot of it is because they're the wrong size, shape, or color to be sold at grocery stores. And so it might be the apple might be too small. It might have some scarring. A carrot might have two legs. Bananas might be a little bit too brown, but all of this doesn't make it to the grocery store and it results in huge environmental and economic consequences. So about 25% of our freshwater supply is lost in food that never gets eaten, and it takes up 21% of our landfill volume. So huge linkages between food waste and climate change. And then the way that our supply chain works is that we source from three different points in the pre-retail value, chain, which means that everything before it hits grocery stores. So we're getting whole ugly fruits and vegetables from growers and from produce distributors and cooperatives. These are things that are like slightly scarred or weren't grown to spec. Sometimes we get calls about hail damaged apples, things that were damaged through climate change, which is a reoccurring phenomenon. And then the third part of our supply chain is fresh cut suppliers. So a lot of people don't know that baby carrots aren't real, but they're not. They're cut down from big carrots. And there's a lot of manufacturing processes that are only utilizing about half of the whole fruit or vegetable. So think like zucchini noodles, when we cut down romaine hearts, baby carrots, celery sticks. So we're partnered with the Northeast's largest produce distributor to source those fresh cut scraps.
That's great. So what percentage makes up kind of like fresh scraps and whole fruits?
We're actively like working on differentiation, but like right now it's about 50-50.
50-50 of it?
Yeah.
Wow. So was creating kind of like that supply chain a big challenge for you guys? I mean, in terms of like, who do you guys partner with in terms of, you know, procuring the like whole fruits that are kind of the misfits?
Yeah. So we work with about six different cooperatives like on the East Coast region. Lancaster Farm Fresh is a partner of ours that a lot of people are familiar with. And then Baldor Specialty Foods is our partner on the scrap waste. Yeah.
Great. So, and then all of those just kind of now distribute to like where you guys are manufacturing or your co-packing, right?
Yeah.
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 That's worked kind of seamlessly. Like,
yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's like definitely a lot of bumps on the road. It's like a lot more like logistics coordination. But Phil has done an amazing job of building out that logistics system. And we actually just brought on a supply chain manager who's coming from a nonprofit organization called One Acre Fund. Which basically helps like small farmers scale. And what's really interesting about that company is that even though they're a nonprofit, they chose to grow like a tech startup. And it was really important for them to have their own internal revenue to support their nonprofit efforts. So Dave has built basically like supply chain infrastructure in rural Kenya and like lots of challenging environments where there's not all the pieces in place. And so he has come on now that we're at a later stage to really build out our supply chain even further.
It's great. Yeah. So 70% of all your guys, for every single one of your juices, is made of scrap. And then the 30% is kind of just like fresh new vegetables.
So 70 to 80% of it is what we would define as like misfits supply chain.
Right.
And then the other 20% is coming from things like lemon and ginger and turmeric and basil and mint, like things that we're sourcing to add culinary value and culinary deliciousness to the product. And then also sometimes if we have like an off week with one particular product, we might source it traditionally, but we're always trying to get that percentage as high as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So are you guys, what do you do with kind of like the pulp and stuff?
Yeah, so we compost it like at our manufacturing site with a composting partner that works with other farmers to turn it into fertilizer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Are you guys ever thinking about turning that into kind of like a snack or another food product?
Yeah, that's definitely something that we've been thinking about strategically and like would love to do. Yeah,
because you guys are planning on kind of changing it from misfit juicery to misfit foods.
Yeah. So we have this much larger like platform concept, which is like working on multiple products from different types of supply chain inefficiencies. I can't really talk about the products that we're working on, but that's definitely like the vision.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, tell me. I mean, when do you think you guys will release a new product?
Yeah, it's a little bit like up in the air right now because of our like fundraising cycle, but definitely like within this year or early next year.
Awesome. So I mean, like how many like products do you guys envision having in this platform? Like,
yeah.
10, 20, 30.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's all about timing. I think that like the first couple of additional products we release are really strategic, and we're really trying to nail the playbook for product development and those additional products. And then depending on how those test cases go, like that will dictate how rapidly and quickly we're releasing additional products. But the goal is really to make sure that those tests go well, because the larger vision really is to have like an entire family of products. Yeah.
I love it. It's so, yeah. so great. So do you have any tips for kind of people that are just starting out that, you know, are wanting to start a social enterprise, like a social enterprise like you have?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So many. I mean, I think, one of my favorite frames about thinking about entrepreneurship is that it's your job to talk to people who are smarter than you. And, I think that a lot of times, like as an entrepreneur, the biggest challenge is that you don't know what you don't know. So the more that you're talking to other people in the space that you admire their work and you admire like who they are as a personal level, the more that it gives you like context for like the larger thing that you're trying to figure out. And then the other thing is just like, I think like communication is like really key amongst like team and external like partners, and like always, like I think that people should be more open about leading with vulnerability and like being vulnerable about what you don't know or what you're not like what you're not sure of. And I think that like that creates really authentic relationships, like both internally and externally.
Yeah, I love your story. Yeah. About kind of you know, leveraging, I hear you often. Yeah. Talked about like leveraging your social capital and like how you got to that.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you could talk a little bit about kind of, you know, not being afraid to ask for help and kind of how that's always kind of been part of like Ann Yang.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so it really comes from this fact that like I grew up in as the daughter of two immigrants, and we grew up in a pretty under-resourced, low-income household. And so for me growing up, like I always understood that relationships were a lot more important than financial capital. And despite the fact that I grew up in a low-income household, like I still like felt like I had this like amazing childhood. When I went to high school, like we weren't really sure how we were going to pay for college, and it really was a community effort. Like one of my friend's parents coached me on the SAT, another one of my friend's moms like edited my college essays, and through that like really huge community effort, I got a scholarship through the Gates Foundation to go to school. And that like really honestly, not only did it like change my earning potential and like change like the ideas I was exposed to at Georgetown, but it also put me in this very privileged place of like having graduated college debt free, which empowered me to like pursue Misfit full time. And so I'm really grateful for that experience. And I think that like as a high schooler and as a college student, where you're like trying to navigate the world with like very low financial resources, it teaches you about the importance of like relationships and how like everything really is like a community building effort. So I think like applying like those lessons I had from my childhood into entrepreneurship has been really helpful, because at the end of the day, like Misfit is about seeing value in places where other people don't. And I think that when you're navigating the world as like a low income student, a lot of it is like trying to figure out how to do a lot with very little resources.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You're killing the game.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back with Ann Yang from Misfit Juicery.
Full Service Radio and The Leap are supported by Glenn's Garden Market, a local grocery store, deli, and craft beer bar at DuPont Circle at 20th and S Streets. Good food from close by.
This is The Leap. We're with Ann Yang from Misfit Juicery. So, Ann, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, starting a social enterprise. Kind of like what differentiates like a social enterprise versus just a regular business?
Yeah, I think the language and definitions and concepts around what a social enterprise has changed a lot in the last few years. I think initially when like social enterprises were coming about, it was like really this idea that it was like a one-for-one model, or like a certain percentage of profits were being donated to a charitable cause. But I think in more recent years, people are starting to realize that social enterprise can be like more operationally defined, and it should be operationally defined in terms of like how the company actually operates. And that basically, like, if you're a mission and purpose driven company, like, you are a social enterprise regardless of what your product is, right? So, and you can do that through your purchasing power. So, if you're a food brand and you're intentionally purchasing, let's say, like, free range or pasture raised eggs, like, you are a social enterprise through your purchasing habits. Or let's say that you have amazing employee benefits, or like Chobani, like, you've chosen to hire a third of your employees from a refugee base. Like, those are always operationally involved in how a social enterprise can be defined.
Do you think, like, just by those things that, like, those things would attract like impact investors? Or do you think it needs to be like a little bit like more robust?
I think there are like amazing like social enterprise businesses that are focused on supply chain innovation, like not just ours, but like people who are creating supply chains in underserved markets around the world and like really like economically supporting like women's cooperatives. I also think that you have like your classic like one-for-one model, like Warby Parker or Tom's. Right. I think like the more thing that I think is like compelling about social enterprises is that it's like really compelling to consumers. Like, I think more and more consumers are starting to use their dollars as voting power, yeah. Right? Like, they're realizing that like their purchasing power and like what brands that they choose to support is like a statement about who they are and like the things that they support. So I think more and more customers are starting to do values-based purchasing, which is affecting how brands are thinking about their business models.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, I mean, I think there's a lot of brand value to it. And now like you're starting to see that kind of like on like P&Ls and stuff, right? Like how do you kind of like monetize that? Or like,
yeah, I mean, like, we're not, like, from a financial perspective, like, we're not, like, advanced enough to, like, to add, like, brand to our P&L, but, like, right. A lot of large companies, like, can do that. I think for us, it's, like, it's really what the soul of the company is, right? Like, I think that, like, the start of the company really was this conversation between Phil and I on, like, what waste means and, like, why this waste was happening in our supply chain and, like, how we can help, like, change the conversation around that in the country differently. And so in terms of like, I guess like monetization of it, it's like, it's in the sense, it's like we are core customers and the people who support Misfit the most, like really believe in that value proposition.
Right. Right.
And it's like helped us find our community and like our traction. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So is there like a lot of other kind of, startups that are doing a similar thing to you guys? And have you guys like formed like kind of like a cohort? Like, you guys like are people, like, there's other products out there that are using pulp to like create snacks and stuff like that. Are you like in tune with all of that kind of community?
Yeah, there's like a great community of like food waste organizations that are all so awesome. One recent collaboration we did was with Gotham Greens, which is an awesome like urban agriculture company out of Brooklyn and Gowanus. And they just launched an Ugly Greens line, which is basically all the greens that aren't pretty enough that they harvest and they put into a bag. And what was so awesome about that initiative is that they put a bunch of other food waste fighting organizations on the back. So our logo is on the back.
Awesome.
Along with our friends at Imperfect Produce and Hungry Harvest and a few other awesome companies that we really deeply admire. So I definitely think, like, food waste is a huge issue. It's 20 billion pounds. So it's definitely going to, like, in order for that to end, it's going to be a collective effort of for-profit and non-profit and work, and also, honestly, like, policy work.
Right.
So it's, like, really awesome to have more and more people, like, in the space.
Yeah. I mean, even big and small. I feel like Gordy's, we, like, you know, we, like, repurpose our, we cut off the bitter end of the cucumber and we repurpose into other products. We're using the byproduct of our cherry pepper spread for Bloody Mary mix. So I guess that's kind of like our way of combating food waste. So I think companies kind of with a social mission, just like you, and then companies just trying to do good for the environment.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's a really, really, really exciting time. So can you tell us kind of about Misfit's like 5-year plan?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You know, like, we're really focused on 2018 right now, but like, I think for like the larger plan is this idea that Misfit as a brand is using this like overarching idea that we're like highlighting misfits in agriculture and in life, right? So there's like this a certain emotionality to the fact that everyone has felt out of place and like an oddball in their life. And we are trying to build a platform like on that concept and tell consumers stories from the food system about supply chain efficiencies in the food system. And the like the process of how we work is like the larger arching idea is like we're taking product that is waste or like supply chain efficiencies and we're adding culinary value and shelf life, right? And right now we're doing that in juice, but that like formula can translate into a lot of different things. So I think in 5 years, like the goal would be to have multiple products out in market that are telling multiple different types of supply chain efficiencies, not just in fruits and vegetables, that are really delivering like a delightful culinary experience to the consumer and solving a real problem for growers and other parts, like other stakeholders in the food system.
Right. Yeah. And are you guys able to like, do you know like the data behind like what, you know, like how many like fruits and vegetables like you've saved from kind of like going in the landfills and stuff like that? Or you're accumulating that data as you go?
Yeah, we are. It's and like you think like a big marketing project that we're working on is like how we better engage consumers on that data. But it's like definitely a huge project that like Dave is working on, our supply chain manager. But to date, it's about 750,000 pounds.
Diverted from waste. Yeah. So where are you guys sold now?
So we're sold all over the East Coast in about 150 different distribution points, mainly in DC and New York. And we have great accounts. So we're in about 30 Whole Foods across the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast. We're in about 15 dig-in locations across New York and Boston. We're in great accounts like the Line Hotel, which we're sitting in right now. We're in Eataly in New York. We're in Dean and DeLuca. So it's like a lot of like great brands that we care and love about, like Tolly Moly in DC, Ellie, like just all these awesome Glen's Garden Market, like all of these like independent places that we really love and care about.
It's great. And did you guys always have kind of like a longer shelf life? What's your shelf life on the juice now?
60 days.
That's amazing. Yeah. Great. It was before, it was not that, right?
When we first started, it was like a raw product.
Yeah, right.
So it was like we like didn't have that long of a shelf life, but we knew that that was like a core part of the process. But the way that we are extend our shelf life is through high pressure processing, and that's a form of pasteurization that doesn't require heat, so you're not like boiling like the juice, right? So it like retains, it's like the most nutritious form of juice on the market because it's all cold processing.
Right.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Anne. Love chatting with you, and we can't wait to see how you continue to grow Misfit brand and leverage your social capital.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening. All right, that live show just finished here on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Stick with us. We'll be right back with some more live programming soon.